Hey everybody, I'm Jazz.
And I'm Molly. And welcome to
Wild
Wicked
World.
You guys, we are back.
Hello.
We are back with another mini wicked
mini.
Oh yeah, I'm excited about this one too.
She be too.
Such a great movie.
It is best of the best.
Yeah, and I that's what I put in. I just read that. That's kind of what I put there.
No, I just seen that. We're thinking alike. Oh, this is probably one of the, because it's a few times that we both love a movie.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of them. So now we're all like geeks.
Now I feel like we both love a lot of horror movies. There's just some that we don't necessarily agree on as far as the spectrum of good to bad.
This is one we agree on, so it's lit. Look, time.
No, we haven't even said yet. Wes Craven's New Nightmare is what we're doing. Uh-huh. But this is like Freddy, the Nightmare on Elm Street were always my favorites for many reasons, because I just, the whole concept of the dream world and stuff, like that's scary as fuck to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's possible. And also, my grandparents lived on Elm Street.
Oh, yeah.
And I lived with my grandparents for many years. So, and I remember when I watched this movie the first time, and I forgot about this. When I watched this movie for the first time, it came out in 94. I was like 16. I lived at my grandparents'. I watched it at my grandparents' house on Elm Street.
Oh, did you have nightmares that night?
Fuck yeah, dude. You had a stick.
Ew.
I mean, I'm just saying. So, like, I remember watching it then, and I was, like, so freaked out after watching this movie.
You're like, this about happened to me?
Yeah. So, anyway, that was nostalgia for me, like, remembering all that and stuff, because I miss my grandparents' house so bad.
Grandparents' house? I'm about to say grandparents' house has always, like, got the best memories. It's crazy.
Yeah. Oh, yes, for sure. So, Jazz, what time is it?
Movie time to fuck around and find out, Molly. The tongue twister.
So like we just said, you guys, this mini wicked is on the best of the best, in our opinions, of course. So, you know, that's always subjective, but, you know, in our opinions, and really, this is our podcast, so that's all that matters.
Yeah, our opinions over everybody else's opinions.
One of the best, and that is Wes Craven's New Nightmare. And it was basically rebooting the Nightmare on Elm Street series, which, you know, was in the 80s. There was, I think Wes Craven only directed like the first three of them. The first two or first three. I can't remember for sure. And then they went on to do like three more, but it was other directors and stuff.
Which you could kind of tell.
Yes, you can, for sure. And then years back, because I think it was 84, actually, when the first one came out. And so this is like 10 years later. And so that's what makes the whole concept of this movie cool, because we'll get into that, but I mean, making it basically to where a movie comes to real life, basically. So, like, people play their own characters, like their true life characters. So, that's kind of interesting. So, without further ado, let's get into this. And Wes Craven's New Nightmare, and it's internationally known in most countries as Freddy's New Nightmare, is a 1994 horror meta slasher film written and directed by the late Wes Craven, who is also a character in it. So like I said, so he actually plays himself in this movie, which is super cool too, as he was a director as well. It was technically not part of the Nightmare on Elm Street film series, but it is associated with it. But it is. Plot focuses on an unnamed demon, which has taken the form of Freddy Krueger and invaded the real world to haunt the actors and film crew responsible for the Nightmare on Elm Street films that existed at the time. Freddy vs. Jason and the Nightmare on Elm Street 2010 had not been made at this time, so those were made after New Nightmare. The film received positive reviews but failed on box office performances. After its release, the film grossed only $18.6 million on North American box office, becoming the lowest grossing film of the series.
Which makes no sense to me.
I think that it just, the time that it came out, I think just wasn't the right time for it to come out. And it did go on to afterwards have more of a cult following, you know. And a lot of movies will do that. They won't do so good in the box offices, but they do amazing afterwards in the aftermarket.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
So, yeah. So it starts out with it's showing a wooden work table covered with tools and parts, and it's shown from above. Presumably, it is the same work table Freddy Krueger made his glove on in the Nightmare of Elm Street 1984 film. It has an anvil on it. An obviously alive and unburned Freddy Krueger is making a mechanical right hand with five claws on it. He picks up a meat cleaver with his left hand and appears to chop off his right hand in preparation for attaching the mechanical right hand to his right wrist. This scene is an imitation of the scene of Freddy Krueger making his glove at the beginning of the 1984 A Nightmare on Elm Street. Heather covers Dylan's eyes, which Dylan is her son. It is then revealed that everything before Heather covering Dylan's eyes was a Nightmare on Elm Street film being filmed. Such a film would just about have to be a reboot. It would be difficult at best to fit such a film into the story of the first six A Nightmare on Elm Street films. The other people on set wince, and the director, Wes Craven, encourages the effects specialist to pump more blood. Soon he yells, "Cut! Print that, Gretchen!" Heather Langenkamp, her husband Chase, and their son Dylan then start wandering around the set of the new Nightmare on Elm Street movie. Presently, the mechanical right hand, which was only a prop a minute ago, comes to life and starts maiming and killing the special effects crew. And it's pretty gruesome.
It is.
It's pretty gruesome. Dylan gets up on a bed, and this is kind of like a setup to what apparently is going to be featured in the movie, this bed. As the mechanical right hand advances to attack Chase, Heather screams, waking up in her own bed in her own house with Chase during an earthquake in Los Angeles. Everything up to this point had been a dream, which is synonymous with the Nightmare on Elm Street. And that's one of the reasons I love the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. You never know when it's real or when it's a dream. Mm-hmm. And like, it can be totally normal, and then all of a sudden they're dreaming. And Wes Craven does a great job of making you wonder.
In this scene, like the way it opens up, you're like, you're into, you're like, oh my God, like, what the heck is going on? And then she wakes up and you're like, oh
this is a Nightmare on Elm Street film. So after the earthquake dies down, Chase has a couple of scratches, which are the very same as he had received in the dream, and they look like claw marks. This causes Heather to wonder if they were sustained in the earthquake or during the dream. Heather reveals she has been receiving harassing phone calls from someone who sounds an awful lot like Freddy. But they stopped for the last couple weeks until now. And it's just somebody calling saying, 1, 2, Freddy's coming for you. 3, 4. You know, that thing.
The greatest song ever.
Yes. We'll sing it later. We'll sing the whole thing later in the... Heather is a guest, so then she gets a phone call, the babysitter shows up, freaky shit's happening. I think like an aftershock happens again too, or something. And then they don't talk about it in this article, but there's also a slash down her wall too, like a claw mark slash down the wall. And then she gets another of the prank phone calls, and then she leaves in like this limousine to go do a, because she's an actress, you know, to do a talk show. So Heather's guest on a morning talk show that very same day, where they discuss the 10th anniversary of the Nightmare on Elm Street films. Also, as part of the talk show lineup, Robert Englund, as himself, tears through a screen dressed up as Freddy Krueger to surprise Heather. Heather is slightly disturbed by this. And of course, Robert Englund is the man who plays Freddy Krueger, and he is the only man who will ever be able to play Freddy Krueger. And I stand by that, because after we watched this movie, me and Davey watched the remake of the Nightmare on Elm Street. And yeah, no.
Trash.
That guy did not do Freddy Krueger's thing justice.
Nobody can.
Not at all. I mean, once Robert Englund is done, like, you should not make this movie again, unless you find somebody who's just like him. So after the show, producer Bob Shea asks Heather to visit his office at New Line Cinema and explains that Wes Craven is working on a script for the new and final A Nightmare on Elm Street film. Heather is asked to reprise her role as main character Nancy, but decides against it with her own recent nightmares, disturbing phone calls, and disgruntlement over her son's change in behavior. Bob explains that her husband Chase Porter is also working on the film, and he is creating a scary new glove for Freddy, much to Heather's dismay. And her husband, of course, was keeping this fact from her. When she gets home, her son has an episode during which he warns her in a voice not of his own, never sleep again. And the kid that plays this kid, he also is the kid in Pet Sematary.
Yep.
And he does a couple other creepy films. This kid plays the best creepy fucking kid ever. He's like, never sleep again. Never sleep again.
never sleep again.
And he just like saying it over and over again in like this creepy ass voice. And then, I mean, this kid is the perfect creepy kid.
He did good.
Worried, Heather calls Chase at Cut to the Chase FX. Prop that looks like the entity's right hand is on a counter. While there are similarities, it is clearly not the mechanical right hand seen at the beginning of the film. She asks him to come home and he agrees to it. As he leaves, it is shown that the prop is no longer on the counter, so he obviously took it with him. So Heather reads, you know, Dylan to sleep, and he reads the story Hansel and Gretel, which we all know is a very gruesome fucking story.
He loves it. He loves that story.
Yes. And Chase, it actually is very relevant because that's kind of how the movie ends. So it is relevant that she sends him this, or that she reads him this story. Chase is shown driving home as he repeatedly dozes off. So he's like falling asleep. And like I told David, we were watching this. I was like, I don't understand people who can nod off while they're driving.
No, no, either.
For one thing, I would never get behind a car if I was super tired. And another thing, I would never be able to fall asleep while I was driving. I can barely fall asleep when I'm laying in bed trying to go to sleep. So
it's definitely hard.
Heather wakes up. And so it's strongly implied that the previous scene was a nightmare that Heather was having. But many people probably have and would take for granted that it was. However, this can be interpreted multiple ways. So either she just woke up all of a sudden because she knew something was wrong, or she was dreaming this happening. So,
I took it as she was dreaming it.
I don't know, because she seems shocked kind of sort of when the cops come and say that he's dead and stuff. So I'm not sure. Like, maybe I feel like, I don't know. You can interpret it either way. So she gets a knock on the door. Police inform her of Chase's death. Heather, she wants to go. She was like, I want to see the body.
Because she know.
So when she sees the body, it seems to her that there may have been more than meets the eye to the crash, as was made apparent by the claw-like marks on his chest. And of course, we saw in the dream that, yeah, for sure, there was claws that came up out of the seat and then basically gutted him. Heather leaves the morgue. There is a funeral for Chase. Heather, and then she freaks out, and like she has an episode, falls down and hits her head. She like hallucinates this, which is pretty cool because It hallucinates like there being a hole in the bottom of the casket that's like they're being sucked down into. So that's kind of neat. And she's trying to save her son and just all that. She's actually, she had fallen down and knocked her head out and fallen asleep. So she was in the dream world. Heather and Dylan are now back at the house. Dylan, now also grief-stricken, continues acting more strangely. Heather, Dylan, and John, her good friend, are at a park. And I believe that the guy, John character, I think he plays her dad in the first movies. She enlists Wes Craven's help for making sense of what's been happening. Craven explains that he does not know much more than she does. He dreams a scene or two each night and wakes up and writes them down. Craven goes on to tell her that in the script he's been writing, pure evil can be temporarily defeated if its essence is effectively captured in a work of art that is able to allow evil to express itself. Craven explains that the evil has taken the form of Freddy Krueger. Because is it a familiar one? Freddy sees her as the gatekeeper who holds Freddy at bay, since Heather's character, Nancy, defeated Freddy in the first movie. To Freddy, it is Heather that gave the character of Nancy her fortitude. Freddy is attacking her at her weakest points, trying to break her down before confronting her, prompting her to leave just as confused as when she arrived. After a short, and then, you know, I want to say something here. Mm-hmm. You know how when she had called Robert Englund's character and like he's sitting there painting like a creepy picture of whatever Freddy Krueger and stuff? If it can be any kind of work of art, I think that would have been a cool thing to do instead of making the movie to like put his essence into that painting.
Yeah.
Oh. Like they should have tied that into it.
They should have.
You know what I mean? I think that would have been cool because like what was the point of them even showing that scene? Okay, he's having the same dreams and yada yada.
Yeah,
you know?
Then it just...
Because it made it seem like it was an important thing because he's like, I've got to finish something first. You know, like he had to finish this painting. It should have taken it and been like, that's where they put his essence into.
That would have been cool. Missed opportunity.
After a short sleep in Dylan's room, Heather wakes to discover Dylan is gone. She goes downstairs and finds Dylan in another episode. And he's watching the movie, the Nightmare on Elm Street movie. Heather finally takes Dylan to the hospital. This part pissed me off so bad. This fucking doctor pissed me off so bad. Yeah. I just wanted to smack her so many times. There, a doctor asks if Dylan said anything during his trance. Heather says no, but the doctor later gets it out of her that Dylan has been doing Freddy-like actions and singing Freddy's theme. Later, Julie, Dylan's babysitter, shows up at the hospital and tells Heather she's had a nightmare about him. So, like, the doctor said something about, you haven't let him see your films, have you? And then she like made it clear that she didn't think that was cool and whatever. And then also, did you get a weird vibe from the babysitter too at the end there? Like something creepy was going on with her?
I thought so. Well, firstly, I hated the nurse. Like, who are you? And then secondly, yeah, the babysitter, she did kind of walk in with weird. Well,
like when she came out that one time, hey, I've got somebody who wants to see you. I was like, that was just kind of creepy. Yeah. But then she ended up not being, I don't know. And like, I didn't know where they were going in their direction with that one. So Heather Lee is intending to head home and return with Rex, which is Dylan's dinosaur that he says protects him from a bad guy. Dylan's stuffed dinosaur, which Dylan describes to her as protecting him from a man that attacks him from beneath his bed cover. Soon after, two nurses want to sedate Dylan, but Julie has been instructed by Heather not to let Dylan fall asleep in her absence. Julie punches one nurse and threatens the other. And that other one she threatened was played by Jessica Craven, which was the director's daughter, with a syringe. Julie locks the door into the room. Meanwhile, Heather is stopped by security guards before she can leave the hospital. Dylan's doctor questions her, intimidating that Heather and Dylan both suffer from hereditary mental illness, and tries to get Heather to agree to foster care for Dylan while Heather receives treatment. Okay, this is what pisses me off about this. This lady is like, saying, well, we'll just take your kid away from you because you seem like you're mentally unwell. Because, you know, it might not have anything to do with the fact that, you know, her husband and his dad just fucking died brutally. You know, come on, lady. But, I mean, you know, they needed it for dramatic effect. So
they had to add the little spice in there.
So the nurses were able to get a sedative into Dylan. So he falls, he drifts into sleep. And then Freddie appears in the locked hospital room and attacks Julie, killing her. The nurses unlock the doors and discover the murder in progress. And then they flee. And she's like up in the air being flung around.
Her death scene was probably one of the best.
Yes, for sure. And especially, and, well, it's me and David were talking about that too. That's a Wes Craven staple right there. Like the up on the wall and going along the wall. He did that in the early Nightmare on Elm Streets. And that's something that he invented and perfected.
And she's like, and my thing is like, she's literally about to die. And she's like reaching for the little boy to help. Like, what he's supposed to do, girl? You way up there on a ceiling. He can't help you.
I also, one of the scenes that's probably my favorite horror scene of all time is the one where the guy gets sucked into the bed.
Yeah, and the blood splatters. Yeah,
and the blood, yes, that is probably one of my favorite horror scenes of all time. That was another Wes Craven, you know, fucking invention mindfuck there. Oh, they discovered and then they flit. So Heather returns to her son's bed, but Dylan is gone. Heather soon remembers that she had sought to comfort Dylan by telling him their home is right across the freeway from the hospital. She discovers Freddie, now a gigantic figure, dangling Dylan from his claws in the freeway's nighttime traffic. Heather arrives home in pursuit of Dylan, but reality begins to change around her. She gets hit by a car and everything, dude, but the kid makes it fucking across. Like, goddamn. And that was a scary-ass scene. I'm like, it was almost hard to watch all those cars coming and shit.
I'm like, oh my goodness. But, like, nobody's seen this kid.
Well, they did. Just people were swerving and stuff.
And she, like, he gets over to the other side easily, and she's just struggling.
Yeah, she is. So Heather's identity seems to blend with that of Nancy, the character she once played in the Nightmare on Elm Street film series. She now stands outside Nancy's house on the movie's fictional Elm Street. So she's not even in her own house. She's in front of the Elm Street house. Freddie is shown rising from Dylan's bed. Heather runs inside, discovering the familiar interior of her own home inside of Nancy's. So that's a mindfuck. And into Dylan's room, finding only the tour dinosaur, Rex, that Dylan believed was protecting him from his attacker. Rex lays in tatters, viciously sliced open. Heather, armed with a knife from her kitchen, consumes sleeping pills. And this one, talking about the Hansel and Gretel. The little boy had left these sleeping pills that he hadn't been taking, and he left them as like breadcrumbs. So he saw the breadcrumbs. So she starts taking these sleeping pills in an attempt to save Dylan. She enters a hot, steamy, waterlogged, and ruined dreamscape, which is the staple of, you know, the Freddy dreamscape. It's always like some industrial-looking kind of area. Dylan finds Heather only for Freddy to attack them both. Heather is incapacitated, and Dylan flees. Then he goes inside this convenient oven that's down there, and this big old oven that's down there. Freddy lures Dylan into a trap and attacks him again. Heather reaches her son and fights off Freddy. But Freddy's, and by the way, Freddy, all of a sudden, his shit can extend. Now, we are in his world, so he can do whatever he wants. He can manipulate things. But his tongue just keeps on wrapping around like a boa constrictor around her head.
Oh, that would make me want to throw up.
I know. But Dylan grabs the knife that his mom had brought down and attacks the tongue with Heather's knife. freeing his mother. Together, the two lock Freddy in the furnace and light its fire with their tormentor inside. Freddy's visage is shown amidst a fiery blast. Dylan and Heather flee, which, you know, that was kind of bittersweet there too, because he originally died in a fire.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I feel like that's probably the reason why Wes Craven did that, because the fire, you know, is like kind of where it all started. So that's right. Where he wanted to end it, you know. So mother and son arrive back home. Craven's now completed script is there as well, waiting for them. Dylan asks his mother to read some of it to him, which she does. We open on an old wooden bench. There's fire and tools and a man's grimy hands building what's soon revealed as a gleaming set of claws. And the claws are moving now as if awakening from long and unwanted sleep. And then it ends. So that is in a nutshell. I mean, it's way better watching it happen as talking about it. So if you haven't ever seen this, or if it's been a while since you've seen it, like my case was, you ought to watch it again because it is a great, great movie. One, two, Fred is coming for you.
Because that's all I know is one,
three,
two.
Three, four, better lock your door. Five, six, get a crucifix. Seven, eight, better stay up late. Nine, ten, never sleep again.
Having nightmares tonight.
Yeah.
Recent trivia.
What?
Trivia.
Down to the trivia. Yeah, I'm going to do it.
I love the trivia. That'd be my favorite part.
Yes. Well, first I'm going to talk about the new Nightmare failed to make a big impression at the box office, as one of the previous six films the United States take in was only $18.6 million and became the lowest earning movie of the franchise. However, this amount was still over two times the budget, so they didn't lose any money. The film debuted at number one at the United Kingdom box office in the early 1995. On Rotten Tomatoes, 79% of critics gave the film a positive review, making it the second highest rated Elm Street film. Several critics have subsequently said that New Nightmare could be regarded as a prelude to the Scream series. Those sets of films deal with the idea of bringing horror movies to real life. While the Scream films appealed to huge audiences, New Nightmare has gathered a smaller, fan-led cult following. I like this one. Roger Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times gave Wes Craven's New Nightmare 3 stars out of 4 and said, "I haven't been exactly a fan of the Nightmare series, but I found this movie with its unsettling questions about the effect of horror on those who create it strangely intriguing." Kevin Summerfield from the horror website Slasher Studies gave it 4 out of 4 stars and said, "New Nightmare is that rare horror film in which everything works. The performances are pitch perfect, led by Tour de France performances by the amazing Landon Camp. The script is full of twists and turns, and the movie is quite possibly the best looking of the entire series." I kind of agree with that. But then Entertainment Weekly's Owen Gleiberman, however, gave Wes Craven's New Nightmare a negative review, stating, "After a good, gory opening in which Freddy's glove, newly designed with sinews and muscles, slashes the throat of the special effects guy who's been working on it, the movie succumbs to a kind of sterile inertia. Wes Craven's New Nightmare isn't about Freddy haunting a film set, which actually might have been fun. It's about Heather Langenkamp, star of the original and Nightmare on Elm Street, being menaced for 2 long, slow hours by earthquakes, cracks in the wall, and other wary portents of doom." Lieberman described the film as just an empty hall of mirrors that lacks the trance-like dreg of the original and the ingeniously demented special effects. I don't agree with that.
He just doesn't get it.
He just wanted gore, is what he wanted.
So. He just didn't pay attention.
Yeah, it was more about the psychologicalness of it. That's what it boils down to with the Freddy ones. It fucks with your brain, the sleep deprivation fucks with you. Like, that's the whole point of the Freddy Kruegers.
And Freddy's going to play mind games with you, and that's exactly what his
MO is. Yeah, that's his modus operandi, exactly. So in the ending credits, Freddy, this is some trivia, guys, Freddy Krueger is listed as playing himself.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
The film features various people involved in the motion picture industry playing themselves, including actress Heather Langenkamp, who also reprises her role as Nancy Thompson. New Nightmare features several homages to the original film. I like this one right here. Wes Craven had wanted to ask Johnny Depp, because, you know, he was in one of the movies, to appear in his film. I think it was the second one.
Mm-hmm.
But figured that Depp had grown beyond interest in acting in horror films, so he never worked up the courage to ask him. After the release of the film, Craven and Depp met up, and Wes mentioned this to Depp. Depp responded that he wished Craven had asked because he would have loved to have been in the film. That would have been awesome. Wes Craven's daughter, which I mentioned earlier, Jessica Craven, played in this movie as the junior nurse.
Now, when I go back and watch it, I'm going to pay attention to it.
Now, they did make Freddy a little bit creepier and scarier looking in this one mm-hmm. than the other ones, too, which, I mean, that's what you got to do. You got to evolve. You want to stick to the original as much as you can, but evolve it to make it a little bit creepier and scarier, as opposed to the newer one who just, like, completely changed his look. Like,
I thought he looked pretty fake. Like, he didn't look realistic.
After that they had play him, I do like that actor. He plays a really good creepy guy. He just wasn't right for Freddy Krueger, mm-hmm. in my opinion. He was really small, too. He's a small guy. So, yeah. And his voice just didn't go right with it. And there wasn't enough jokes. The whole thing about Freddy is that he's scary, but he's always doing puns and trying to be funny and shit.
He's
you know?
An asshole, for real.
Yeah, and that's what I love about it. Because, you know, I love my horror funny shit, you know. So I don't know, but let's give it a rating here.
Oh, 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10. I think we both agree on that. 10 out of 10. This is probably one of our favorites in the horror genre, especially Nightmare on Elm Street. So and I was like totally in the mood for Nightmare on Elm Street too. That's why I watched the reboot, but I was disappointed in that. So and Netflix has all of them. Netflix has
Seriously?
Every single one of them. Yep. So if you want to watch any of the Nightmare on Elm Streets, as of right now, they are all on Netflix. So what is it?
Battle Royale.
Battle Royale? I think that might be one
of
mine.
That's not me.
Battle Royale? It's something I haven't seen, but I think it's a suggestion from somebody. Like I said, when we start putting them in there, I need to start putting names of suggestions. Let me look. Battle Royale. It's probably something disturbing.
Royale.
I got it. Yeah, you're right. So it Battle is. Royale. But if you just put Battle Royale movie...
Okay.
42 ninth graders are sent to a deserted island. They are given a map, food, and various weapons. An explosive collar is fitted around their neck. If they break a rule, the collar explodes. Okay, I already like it.
I think I've seen that.
I already like it. It looks like it might be an Asian film. Yeah, it looks like an Asian film, so I don't know if it'll be... hopefully I can find it dubbed. But okay, I like the plot already. I definitely like the plot already. I really do think this was a Matt or Connie suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
So Matt, Connie, if you guys are listening, let me know which one of you suggested that, because I keep on forgetting to put people's names on these and I want to give you guys the proper credit for the movies. So Battle Royale, that's with an E, if you want to find it, or just put in Battle Royale with movie and it popped right up for me. I'm trying to see what year... Oh, 2000. So, okay, that's going to be our next mini Wicked. What we'll do that in like, what, 2 weeks,
yep.
a week, something like that. So that'll give you plenty of time to watch that one. All right. So that's going to do it for our mini Wicked this time, you guys. So don't forget to, you can contact us if you'd like to suggest some movies at...
3WPodcast2022@gmail.com.
Follow our social on TikTok and Instagram, both at
3WPodcast.
Like our Facebook and join the discussion group, both at
Wild Wicked World.
Don't forget that X. Find us there under
3WPodcast2022.
All right, guys. Keep watching that horror, but be decent humans. Okay? Bye-bye now. All right, now a little about our first ever sponsor, helping us to get this show a-going. Let's Move KC. Not only is this a family-owned business by my cousin Morgan and her husband Brett, my oldest son also worked for them the summer after he graduated high school. With over 20 years of professional moving and storage experience, they are proud to be a family-owned and operated business right here in the KC metro area. Their services range anywhere from local moving to interstate moving, packing and unpacking, one item or whole household and storage is available upon request. They offer specialty moving services as well. Piano, baby grand, grand upright and spine, safes, hot tubs, or any other unique thing you may have. They are fully insured and offer additional insurance upon request. Their main goal is to make sure you feel comfortable and safe in a stressful time like moving by handling your personal stuff like it was their own. whatever you need, whatever your need is, they can make it happen. So if you're about to move, and this goes for any of our listeners in any states, they're a moving service for any size in any state. Check them out at letsmovekcmovers.com or check them out on Facebook under the name Let's Move KC.